science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello and welcome to ThinkWorks, the place where we like to do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this episode, we turn 50. And I thought, do you know what would be really cool to do for my 50th episode of ThinkWorks? Is to go back into the annals of time and pick up on a series of talks that I did, a series of lectures that I did called the 50-Year Horizon. And this is where I looked at science and technology and where it was going over the next 50 years. And I thought, 50-Year Horizon, episode 50, you can see where I'm going with this, can't you? But I've thought about it and I've tried to remember, where did I first hear the term the 50-Year Horizon? And I'm pretty sure it was Arthur C. Clarke. I've certainly heard him talking about the concept of advancing theories about what could happen in the future. I'm pretty sure that I first read it in his excellent book of essays that he pulled together from all his predictive articles, his reviews, his thoughts on particular projects like 2001: A Space Odyssey. It's a great book called Greetings, Carbon-Based Bipeds. And he basically discusses in that the challenges of predicting the future. Clarke believed that beyond a 50-year outlook, the path of technological and scientific progress becomes unpredictable. And in fact, what he said was, if an expert makes some very cautious predictions about where science and technology is going in the next 50 years, he's probably right. If he tries to make predictions about what happens after the 50 years, or he makes outlandish predictions about what could happen within the 50 years, he's probably wrong, but he would still have a stab at it. And that's what I'm going to try and do here in this. So in effect then, the horizon marks the edge of our ability to foresee what the future holds. And as the pace of innovation accelerates, our imagination becomes stretched to its limits. So we're going to look into Clarke's immense contributions to science and technology. It would be rude not to. We want to explore his visionary thoughts on the future and then speculate on what scientific and technological wonders could emerge over the next 50 years. Now, the talks that I've done are out of date because they were like 20 years ago, but it's interesting to see that some of the predictions that I started to make, like AI, for example, are really now coming into their own, and advances in robotics and other aspects of our scientific development are all starting to come to fruition. It's fascinating to see that. We still haven't got our jet cars and we still haven't got our teleportation devices, but IBM actually did an advert about 20 years ago predicting that they would in fact have a teleportation device by the year 2050. So that's going to be fascinating to see where they are with that little project. But if you look at it really and how things are emerging now from nanotechnology and AI, as I've mentioned, and I've just mentioned teleportation. We're not talking about teleporting a real person, by the way. We're talking about teleporting just small cargo, freight, cups and stuff like that. But I'll tell you a little anecdote about that later. We've also got space travel now becoming much more prevalent and corporations looking to expand their reach into space because they see a profit in mining minerals, for example, from asteroids and even the moon. We'll traverse the boundary, I think, where imagination meets possibility, shall we? Are you ready to come on that journey with me? So buckle up. We'll journey into the future. And we'll have a look at some of the profound ideas left by one of the greatest visionaries of our time. So let's begin that exploration then of the 50-year horizon. Now, Arthur C. Clarke stands as a colossus, I think, in both the realms of scientific thought and in science fiction literature. And he has influenced generations with his foresight and imagination. He was born in December 1917 in Minehead, Somerset, in England. And from a young age, Clarke was fascinated by the stars and the possibilities of space travel. His early experiences, including building small telescopes and devouring the pulp science fiction stories of that era, ignited that lifelong passion that would shape his future pursuits. He studied at King's College in London, and he honed his skills in physics and mathematics. During World War II, he served as a radar specialist in the Royal Air Force, an experience that deepened his technical knowledge and influenced his later theoretical work on communication. And that's where Clarke started to really make his mark. In 1945, he published a seminal article in Wireless World proposing a network of satellites that were positioned in a geostationary orbit. And this would facilitate global communications. In fact, a lot of people still refer to the idea of these geostationary satellites and the reality of them, I should say, as the Clarke orbit, because this idea was decades ahead of its time and it laid the foundations for modern telecommunications, TV broadcasting and, of course, GPS systems as well. He also proposed the idea of a space elevator, a revolutionary way to transport materials to orbit via a tether extending from Earth's surface into space. Although that's still a theoretical concept, advances in material science of bringing this idea closer to feasibility. It would make transporting equipment, for example, up to the space station cheaper. It would also mean that you could build spaceships in orbit, which would be cheaper, and you wouldn't have the expensive fuel requirements needed to launch a spacecraft into orbit or beyond the solar system. If you launch it from Earth, the amount of sheer power that you would need to do that. But if you can build it in space and launch it from space, then that becomes a much easier and safer prospect for the astronauts that are taking off. He also predicted the internet. He predicted the fact that people would be able to work anywhere in the world from and actually do their work from any location. And all these ideas you start to see now are coming true. Or have come true, in fact. But it would be rude not to also look at his literary contributions and philosophical insights. So his literary works are filled with scientific accuracy and imaginative zest, and they became a bridge, really, between science and the arts. Obviously, his most notable works include 2001 A Space Odyssey, a collaboration with Stanley Kubrick based on a short story that Clarke had written called The Sentinel. It's an iconic film, and the novel and the series that followed explore ideas of artificial intelligence, space exploration, human evolution even, and it poses enduring philosophical questions about technology and our future. And basically, he predicted the idea of the singularity, the point where artificial intelligence, robotics and humanity begin to merge into one. It's all there in that particular piece of work. My favourite novel by Clarke is Rendezvous with Rama. It's the best science fiction film still not made. Please, someone make it into a film. It's absolutely brilliant, and it basically exemplifies Clarke's ability to weave grand cosmic mysteries with human introspection, I should say, promoting the idea of limitless exploration and discovery. And the idea between Rendezvous with Rama is a strange object appears to be on a collision course with Earth, but then slows down, and not exactly in an orbit, but it slows down to come around the Earth. So they send some astronauts up to explore and find that actually it's hollow inside, and it's a hollow world. So basically all the surface of this hollow world is alive with vegetation and all kinds of strange creatures. And it's a mystery. It's a, what is it? Why is it here? What's its purpose? They give them the name Ramans, and the object is on a mission, but they don't know what the mission is. They don't know who the Ramans are because they're not on board. And they realise that the Ramans do everything in threes. And there's a lot of concept and play with that. It's an absolutely brilliant novel. I would really highly recommend it. And another one that is very powerful is Childhood's End. And that is the narrative that delves into humanity's transformation and transcendence, where a new species of humanity that evolves out of the physical plane is coming into being. But to do that, the people of the past generation that are still us, still carbon-based life forms, we cannot coexist. It's an amazing, amazing story again. And you need to really read that because it reflects Clark's own thoughts on the human potential and the role of technology in that evolution. Now, his work has obviously earned him numerous accolades, and his visionary ideas continue to inspire new generations of scientists and engineers and storytellers. And in Sri Lanka, where he spent much of his later life, Clark continued to write, communicating his visions for the world through his articulate and thought-provoking prose. If you read some of his non-fiction articles and reviews, he's just got such a brain and a way with words. Now, Clark's inventive spirit is succinctly captured in his three laws. Clark's three laws. And these were: when a distinguished but elderly scientist states that something is possible, he's almost certainly right. When he states that something is impossible, he's very probably wrong. 2. The only way of discovering the limits of the possible is to venture a little way past them into the impossible. And 3, and I love this one, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And that's an idea that he returns to again and again. Clark was also a real enthusiastic advocacy for space exploration, and he popularized the idea of space as the next frontier and supported various space related initiatives and awareness programs, encouraging an enduring curiosity about our universe and its endless possibilities. Much like one of my other heroes, in fact, Carl Sagan, who was heavily involved in space exploration with the Voyager and Pioneer programs, Clark, his impact cannot be understated. And we kind of forget about him in modern times because he was writing in a particular era and he died a very long time ago. But his impact is all around us. Whenever you pick up a phone and make a call or you go onto the internet, they stem from propositions and ideas and calculations that Clark first put forward. So returning to that idea of Clark's predictions then, these predictions often emerged from that synthesis of scientific knowledge and imaginative insight. While some futurists are content with vague forecasts, Clark provided concrete, detailed visions of the future that have remarkably aligned with reality. So some of his key predictions and insights, we've touched upon space exploration and colonization. He was a staunch advocate for human space exploration, predicting that humanity would eventually establish bases on the moon and Mars, and his works often feature space travel as commonplace, envisioning a future where humans and machines alike traverse the cosmos. His global communication network, beyond his satellite communications proposal, Clark also foresaw the development of what we now call the internet and the digital communication network. He imagined a world where information was accessible to all, fostering a global village interconnected with technology. In terms of artificial intelligence, we all know, I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that, from HAL 9000, of course, in 2001, A Space Odyssey. And he explored themes of how artificial intelligence would develop well before the advent of modern computing. HAL, a sentient computer, raises questions about machine consciousness and ethical considerations, and topics that continue to be relevant as the pace of AI development is developing today. And I've done a couple of podcast episodes on the idea of I think, therefore I am. And I expanded that to include a look at where we're going with the ideas of artificial intelligence and artificial consciousness. So if you go back into my ThinkWorks library, darreninform.com/ThinkWorks, you'll find that the episodes are there for you, all the episodes, preceding episodes to this. But he also predicted advancements in medicine and biotechnology. He actually postulated the advent of advanced medical technologies that led to genetic engineering. He foresaw a future where diseases could be eradicated through technological intervention, an idea now being realized, of course, through fields like genomics and biotechnology. And he apart from his serious articles and papers that he wrote, obviously, he used his fiction it was like a playground for his ideas, and it allowed him to theorize, I think, on future societal structures that presented ethical dilemmas. Novels like The Foundations of Paradise not only imagined engineering marvels like the space elevator, but also considered environmental impacts and cultural shifts that stemmed from this technological progress. And this is another aspect of Clarke's work that we need to acknowledge, the fact that he did present philosophical considerations about technology and science. He wasn't just looking to forecast the technological change. He really tried in his fiction in particular to understand the philosophical implications of these advances. So his narratives often explored human conditions, emphasizing themes of transformation, the quest for knowledge, the potential for technology to elevate humanity, but also to pose unprecedented challenges. And his visions just extended so much beyond his fictional work, and his advocacy for scientific curiosity and exploration. He engaged with technologists and thought leaders to discuss the potential and limits of human innovation. His views on the convergence of technology and society inspired both scientific advances and public policy considerations, especially regarding space exploration, environmental stewardship, and ethical technology usage. And this is where we're now starting to see, with the rampant form of capitalism that we have, where technology is basically being let rip in certain circumstances, and denial about some of the impact of that technology. It's a shame we don't have a Arthur C. Clarke or a Carl Sagan around today that really know how to articulate the dangers of some of the paths that we are going down, but also to highlight some of the optimistic, beautiful visions of the future that we could have with the right kind of policy framework. Moving on to the next section then. So let's have a look at this. Let's try this whole idea of predicting scientific and technological horizons over the next 50 years. So as I've said, beyond 50 years, you start to drift into the realm of science fiction. But there's also another law, which is we tend to overestimate what we can do in 1 year, but we underestimate what we can do in 10 years. So you have to take Clarke's three laws that I mentioned earlier, plus that law into consideration when we discuss the ideas of what could be coming along over the next 50 years. So nanotechnology, I did a whole piece, a whole podcast on the idea of nanotechnology and biomedicine and what have you. So again, if you refer back to the ThinkWorks library, you'll see the episodes there for you to listen to. But in healthcare, nanotechnology promises a medical revolution which enables targeted drug delivery systems where nanoparticles can seek out and treat specific cells, minimizing side effects and maximizing the effectiveness. And Japanese robot manufacturers were experimenting with this as far as 20 years ago. They were developing nanobots that could find cancerous cells and inject directly into those cells. They were experimenting with that then, and we're making advances in nanotechnology all the time. Nanomaterials also have an environmental impact because it could lead to breaking down environmental pollution, for example. If you can rearrange an atom at a molecular level, you can change what that atom or series of atoms becomes. And that's the whole idea of nanotechnology. It's rearranging the constitution of something to make it something else. It's the quest for turning lead into gold in some ways. It's not, the whole idea of being able to release nanotechnology into the atmosphere and take polluted particles and clean them down, I just think is a mind-blowing concept. And I really wish governments would invest into this kind of technology a lot more than they do. But it also means you can have advanced filtration systems for water and clean air. And it makes for more efficient solar panels, so you can generate more power from the sun rather than using fossil fuels. But nanotechnology is also increasing the capabilities in manufacturing and materials science. So it is slowly reinventing the whole manufacturing process. And it produces lighter, stronger, more durable materials through molecular engineering that is less environmentally impactful. Now, unless you've been living on the moon for the last 5 years, the whole idea of artificial intelligence is coming along in leaps and bounds. And AI is definitely now being used a lot more to enhance decision-making processes. It provides unprecedented support across industries, from medicine to education systems, personalizing them to the needs of the individual, to advanced healthcare diagnostics. Cognitive AI, the line between where human and artificial intelligence blurs, could become a reality with artificial consciousness. We could see AI that not only processes data, but starts to exhibit true creativity and emotional intelligence. And we have to ask the question then, what do we do if suddenly in that soup, that primordial soup of the internet, an AI does develop consciousness and starts to say, I think, therefore I am. Do we pull the plug? Do we have the right? Have we created a new life form? All these things are just fascinating topics to discuss. But that's where we're going with AI now. Now, teleportation, now I mentioned this earlier. I've got a fantastic anecdote, which I'll tell you in a moment. But quantum advancements in computing and in the ability of our understanding of quantum mechanics, it just means that at the moment we have successfully teleported a molecule, and we've been doing that for about 10 years. But it's all at the quantum level. But it does bring us closer to practical applications such as highly secure information transfer through quantum entanglement communication. And research in the field is slowly leading to other breakthroughs, which could be called teleportation. Virtual reality systems offer immersive experiences, or technologies that transport human presence digitally, are all starting to come online. People are starting to look at the idea of uploading human consciousness into a quantum created mind. All this kind of fascination that we've got is coming along. And IBM was so sure that they were going to have a practical desktop teleporter by the year 2050. They ran a series of adverts. And I remember I used to do something called the ITU, the IT update, where I would go into an organization and talk about between 3 and 5 of the big IT companies at the time, what their plans were, what they were bringing on stream, and how it would affect the particular industry that I was in. And at the end of every one of those, I also did a futures bit, which is what the 50-year horizon basically stem out of. And I did the whole teleportation pitch from IBM to IATA. Now, IATA is the air transport body that really is, it's all the big players, they've all got representations within the organization. And they basically look at what could affect the industry, whether it's fuel price changes, differences in technology, etc. And I presented that and said that, you know, they're going to have this in 2050. And if I were you, I would start to look at how you can invest in these companies that are developing or planning to develop a teleportation device. And what was fascinating was it was only supposed to be a 5-minute piece at the end of my presentation, and it turned into over an hour of debate between half of the members of that team that were in there saying, oh my goodness, you know, 30% of all our money comes from freight and this could wipe it out overnight, with the other half saying that it's purely science fiction. Now, we couldn't convince them to start looking outside the box on this. And this was at a time when the airline industry had plenty of money, that it was in surplus as an industry. And since then, of course, following 9/11 and COVID and everything else, they have no money now to invest in futures, which is, I think, is a real shame. But it is going to be fascinating to see which company does actually create some kind of deconstructive, reconstructive, using quantum entanglement to take a cup or a box, a box of cups, and instead of sending it by air, putting it on a desktop teleporter and sending it somewhere in the world. It's amazing stuff. And I really, really, that to me, 2050 is the year to look out for. But I am going to be doing some more research for this, because I'm updating my 50-year Horizon talks, but I'm also making it into a book. So I'm now starting to contact all my old contacts and research teams and start to pull all that together and see where we're going to go, in particular with teleportation. Now, associated with artificial intelligence, you've got the whole idea of robotics. We all know that, you know, we've had production lines where cars are built by robots for a very long time now. But they are becoming increasingly autonomous, capable of operating in diverse environments as well, from industrial settings to exploration missions now on celestial bodies, but also in war. We've got Raptor-type robots that are programmed to seek out and adapt to the conditions that they're in, but to seek out enemy combatants. And we're, you know, the US military is running tests on these devices right now. Human-robot collaboration is starting to become more prevalent as well. And for example, with surgery, remote surgery, where a robot is expected to be able to follow instruction from a surgeon from a remote location, but also is programmed to adapt should that connection be lost and the robot just doesn't just stop. It's programmed to do certain types of tasks and adapt where necessary. And the societal impact of robots in daily life could reshape employment landscapes dramatically. And this, I think, means that looking at how societal structures are set up in future is becoming more and more imperative. And the Star Trek vision of where people aren't productive per se, they contribute. So society isn't about working for the almighty dollar, it is about progressing humanity's visions, it's about a service kind of orientation, and it's about exploration and being supportive of the planet itself. So there's all kinds of different things we need to look at, instead of just shutting down an industry as we've done in the past and throwing hundreds of thousands of people out of work. We need to be looking at how we can reskill. We need to be looking at how we can actually change the rules about how we run society and govern society, because we're going to have to find some way to make people feel valued if they haven't, or their robots replace the job that they were doing. And at the moment, we're not even considering that. And I think that is going to come back and bite us if we don't. Space travel is becoming more prevalent as well. So space tourism is what some of the big players like Bezos and Musk are aiming for. And Richard Branson, of course, with Virgin Galactic. The whole idea is to take people into space for a tourist attraction, or to, you know, to create moon bases and also a proper kind of space hotel where people can go. I mean, at the moment, they're aiming obviously for the ultra rich, but Branson and Bezos were looking at it from the point of view of driving down prices, so it would be like 10 grand to go to space, not the kind of like million it is at the moment. It's just unbelievable, the guys, the vision that these guys have got and are working on. And we are looking at the whole idea of interplanetary colonization. Both governments and private industry are starting to look seriously at the whole idea of having a moon base or a Mars base, with the idea of exploring and exploiting those worlds. But also, as a species, we need to understand how long-term exposure to the conditions of space and other planets affects us, because we are one pale dot, as Carl Sagan said, and it's very easy for pale dots to get blotted out. And so it would be a shame if we inhabited only this one world, when we could take ourselves to the stars, starting planet by planet in the solar system that we have. And I think what will drive this more than anything is private corporations wanting to go and get those minerals extracted for manufacturing and energy production, because we're running out of them here on Earth. But there are other frontiers as well to discuss. So we've got biotechnology and genetic engineering. These advances are allowing us to manipulate biological systems with precision. And gradually, I think, over the next 50 years, we will start to see cures for previously incurable diseases, but also the potential for human enhancement. And this is where ethical questions need to come in. We also need to stop corporations from hoarding technologies, especially the pharmaceutical companies, that don't really want us to have a cure for the common cold, because they make a fortune on selling remedies for when we do have a cold. So we have to start taking the investment into these advances, these medical advances and genetic engineering. We need to start taking that out of the hands of corporations and actually be funding it as a government exercise, because then it will benefit everyone. We also need to consider fusion energy, which is harnessing nuclear fusion, which is clean energy. It's not as dangerous as nuclear fission, which is what we currently have. And it provides a clean, limitless power source. But again, the people that are invested in that are small independent teams that then get mopped up by the big oil companies. No conflict of interest there at all. What we need to be doing is governments, again, need to be directing and managing these teams and paying them enough to keep them involved with government projects rather than being siphoned off to the big corporations. So we need to have regulation and control. We need to look at ethical frameworks, and we need to ensure that the technological benefits that are being currently explored benefit humanity as a whole, and are not just kept in the hands of the ultra-rich, or indeed sat on by corporations out to make a profit. These two things, more than anything else, is what governments need to be looking at now, and sadly we're not. We're too obsessed with productivity levels instead of looking at how we can manage the whole development of technological and scientific progress over the next 50 years and how it can benefit each country, but humanity as a whole. Now, next week, I'm going to do a deeper dive into these ethical considerations and look at some of the challenges that these advances could start to bring, as well as the opportunities. But I hope you've enjoyed that. I love this whole idea of this horizon, this point where we can just about see where we're going with science and technology, but beyond that, it becomes harder and harder to predict. Remember that we tend to overestimate what we can do in a year, but underestimate what we can do in 10 years. And we need to keep revisiting this. I've got a book that I'm working on that will be out hopefully next year. I've got You 2.0 Build Yourself Better coming out this year, 50-Year Horizon, and or my Conspiracies book, both of great fun books to research and write. But I'll be touching on some of those themes in this podcast anyway. So keep watching out for information on all that. But in the meantime, again, ask questions. I always say this at the end of every episode. It's really important that we continue to ask questions. So come and join me in the ThinkWorks forum, which is darreninform.com/ThinkWorks forum. There are posts for each of the episodes of ThinkWorks that I do, and you can come in there and comment on ideas of your own or views or things that you'd like me to even consider going forward, or just ask questions and I will get back to you and answer them to the best of my ability, or at least refer you somewhere where you can find out more information on certain things. This is the whole idea of ThinkWorks. I'm 50 episodes in and I'm loving every minute of it. And as I say, next week we'll just touch upon some of these ethical considerations. Until then, keep asking questions, stay safe. It's a crazy world out there and getting crazier by the moment. And I think we need to, as a people, and I'm talking about not those that are in government or the heads of corporations, I'm talking as a people, we need to start to ask questions, and we need to start to bring some of these people to heel and to understand that they are not acting in our name, and we need to change the whole way that we look at life, society, work, integration, everything. And that only comes through people asking questions. And if enough of us ask questions, it'll cause a pause to happen, because politicians in particular will realise they have to stop and answer that question. And at the end of the day, their invested interest is to stay in power, which means that they have to actually keep us happy. And at the moment, they're just doing what they want, because we're not asking the right kind of questions. So please come and join me in this little movement of question asking. But in the meantime, just let me know what you think. I'll talk to you all next week. In the meantime, take care, everyone, and I'll see you soon.
Would like to find out more or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for at Darren Inform for news, tips and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to ThinkWorks, the podcast for thinkers.